Okay, so my talk tonight is going to be about the two great commandments, which are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. I'm going to present it as sort of a... There's two main points I wanted to get across, but I'm going to go over these two commands because they're so important using a technique called close reading. It's what English majors like to do a lot. And as I do this, there's going to be two points that sort of become apparent by the end of my talk that I'm going to sort of go back to and highlight. So the two great commands are great because Jesus says that all of the law and the prophets hang upon them. That every law from the Old Testament can be understood in terms of one or the other of these two great commands. And the first command is Deuteronomy 6:5. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. So I first wanted to talk about
you shall love.
Because that's the first part of this command. Jesus says that no one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. So that's sort of the love that he's going after, is this really intense love. It's offering everything that you've got. It's important to note that it's this laying down of, it's a gift. It's not something that's being taken from you, but love is this gift that is given. Now, although he said that no one has greater love than this to lay down one's gifts, one's life for one's friends, not everyone's called to be a martyr and actually go out and die for Christ or for your neighbor. Some of us are called to give our life through our daily life. So I know, Erlene, you work at the school, at the college. And so in your daily interactions, you're called to constantly bring to mind Christ and to be offering any trial that you may have up to him. And so it's about sort of giving of your daily life, all of your daily life. But the apex that has been set is to give your life. So when you do something like, I don't know, say there's a, you give $5 to a homeless person, that's like by far the minimum, because the bar has been set at give your life. So that's how high we're called to be.
So you shall love the Lord.
So Lord here in this verse is actually Yahweh, or YHWH. No one really remembers how to pronounce it. It's the actual name of God. And it means I am he who is, or I am who am, or I am who I am. It's sort of a mysterious name. It's a name that it's not really a name. And that idea goes back to mystery, as Dennis was talking about in the last talk. And because the Lord is mysterious, it's a continual conversion that we're on, because a mystery is not ever solved. So you can never close the book on God and put it away and be like, okay, I'm done now. So we're constantly going after God. We're constantly falling in love with him to greater depths. A continual conversion. And so after your baptism, you'll still be converting. It'll just be in a different way. It's a whole lifelong process.
So the next part of it is your God.
You shall love the Lord your God. So Jesus frequently refers to our God as Abba, as Father, our Dad. So there's this personal connection, and there should be that personal connection, because this is about a relationship. As I was preparing this talk, I was thinking that this is a lot like, I don't know, like Match.com, where you know, you go up and you get like a little short printout of who this person you're about to go on a date with, what you know, some of their attributes. And that's sort of what we're giving you here. We're giving you this sort of short little printout, you know, where you can learn a little bit about God, but the real like relationship is going to start when you actually go to that date and you start getting to know who God is. So you shall love the Lord your God. With all. Jesus uses a parable that goes like this. Who among you would say to your servant who has just come in from plowing or tending sheep in the field, come here immediately and take your place at table? Would he not rather say to him, prepare something for me to eat? Put on your apron and wait on me while I eat and drink. You may eat and drink when I am finished. Is he grateful to that servant because he did what was commanded? So should it be with you. When you have done all you have been commanded, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what we are obliged to do. So with all means don't slack. Keep fighting at it. Keep going. Never give up and never be content with something less than everything in your relationship with God. So it's with all. Your heart.
Before the garden, at the Last Supper. So right the day before Jesus was about to be crucified. He said, I will no longer speak much with you, for the ruler of the world is coming. He has no power over me. But the world must know that I love the Father and that I do just as the Father has commanded me. So Jesus here is saying, I'm about to be crucified to show you that I'm obedient to God and that I love God. So with all your heart, with all your love, you have to be willing to lay down your life as Jesus laid down his life. He's that perfect example for us.
And the next part is with all your soul.
Now, soul is, I don't know, it's a word that's sort of tossed around a lot that doesn't really, it's not really defined in popular meaning. So I thought I'd define it first. From the Catechism's glossary, the soul is defined as the subject of human consciousness and freedom. So it's basically like your willpower or your will. So I gave you the previous quote about, you know, at the Last Supper, but then in the garden, so even closer to his execution, Jesus prayed, My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. So with all your soul means that you bend your will to God's will, sort of like a bonsai plant. You train yourself to be modeled after God. You might not want to do something, but you force yourself to do it with your willpower to do what is right.
The next part is with all your strength.
This is one of my favorite scripture stories. It doesn't seem like very much when I go over it, but I'll talk about it and you'll see how it's really kind of cool. He got into a boat with his disciples, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly, a violent storm came up on the sea, so that the boat was being swamped by waves, but he was asleep. They came and woke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. And he said to them, Why are you terrified, O you of little faith? Then he got up, rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. I don't know if any of you have ever been on a boat, but when a storm comes up, it can be kind of scary. Now, the men he was with, some of them were fishermen, so they had been out in storms before. So this must have been like a really bad storm if they were scared by this storm. So imagine
You're out in a boat. It's rocking back and forth. It's a storm that's so big that fishermen are scared of it. And now imagine being asleep in that boat. How tired must you be to have those waves crashing over the bow into your face, being tossed from side to side against the side of the boat? I mean, and sleeping all through that? You must be exhausted. You must just be absolutely tired. So we see how hard Jesus worked for his Father. He's going about ministering to all the people, and he works himself to the bone. He is so tired, the storm and getting splashed in the face with water doesn't wake him up. So it's really loving with all your strength, giving it his all. The next command is, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So I wanted to focus on your neighbor. I don't know how much you guys know about what life was like in Bible times. So I'm going to explain some classes of people. The priests were the ones who, like, they got to minister to God. They were like the ones who were closest to God. They got to be in the temple doing the sacrifices. That was like, they were seen as the ones who were going to be, if you knew God, you were going to be getting it from a priest. The Levites were the sort of one step out from that. They were the group of people that took care of the temple for the priests. They were like the holy people who helped the priests out. And the Samaritans, they were people from the northern kingdom of Israel. And the northern kingdom of Israel, they had mixed up a lot of their beliefs with the pagan beliefs in the area. In fact, when the two kingdoms split, their first king, you know, oftentimes we hear the story about how Aaron made a golden calf. Well, the first king of the northern kingdom made two golden calves, one for the north part of his kingdom and one for the southern part of his kingdom. So if you can understand how far afield they were seen by the regular Jewish person, they were seen as, you know, they were like pagans. They were not to be liked at all. So there was a scholar who stood up and asked Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man fell victim to robbers as he went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. They stripped him and beat him and went off, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the road, but he saw him and he passed to the opposite side. Likewise, a Levite came to the place, and when he saw him, he passed by on the opposite side. But a Samaritan traveler who came upon him was moved with compassion at the sight. He approached the victim, poured oil and wine over his wounds, and bandaged them. Then he lifted him up on his own animal, took him to an inn, and cared for him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper with the instruction, 'Take care of him. If you spend more than what I have given you, I shall repay you on my way back.' Which of these, in your opinion, was the neighbor to the robber's victim?" He answered, "The one who treated him with mercy." Jesus said, "Go and do likewise." This story is really impressive when you start to think about the characters involved. The characters who you would expect would know God the most, and would you expect, you know, that the priest should be trying to minister to the people and the Levites should be trying to help out. Instead, they just leave their fellow citizen on the side of the road. And then the Samaritan, who, I mean, probably squabbled quite a bit with Jews in his day, he's the one who sees this person and takes compassion on him. So the story tells us that even those who we have a reason to hate, like the Samaritan probably has a lot of good reasons to hate the Jews in his day because they probably mistreated him pretty poorly. We're to love those people, and those people are our neighbors. And then I think my favorite part, which is often forgotten, is that you shall love your neighbor
as yourself.
There's a certain amount of loving of yourself that you have to do. Jesus' first miracle was at a wedding, and he turned water into wine. And one of my other favorite verses in the Bible is, "Then Levi gave a great banquet for him in his house." So here you have one of the disciples of Jesus throwing a big party for Jesus. So you got to kind of enjoy yourself sometimes. Because if you don't love yourself, there's kind of a contradiction. If you love yourself only this much, then that means you can love your neighbor only this much. But if you love yourself this much, then you're to love your neighbor this much. So the better you love yourself, the better you can love your neighbor. And to remember that you yourself are also a child of God, and so you should treat yourself no worse than you would treat somebody else. So I think that to just sort of tie it all back together, Jesus is the perfect expression of the law. And I hope that you can see how he followed the law perfectly, that he really gave all of his heart, his soul, and his strength. And that because of that, he is a more perfect law to follow than the Old Testament commands. He fulfills that more completely, and in following him will fulfill our obligations to God more completely than we would if we were to follow a set list of rules. And love is really, really important. It makes the burden of all of the nice things you do, like, I don't know, if you see somebody who's mugged out there today and you take them to an inn and pay the, what is it, I don't know, $50 for a hotel room these days. It's easy to part with that when you love the person you're doing that for. So love is sort of the driving principle behind all of this. This is why Jesus' yoke is easy and his burden is light, because you're in love with him. I think it's kind of tragic that Song of Songs isn't cited more, because in church I don't think we read it very often, and it really shows how deeply we're to be loving God. So I wanted to read a little passage. And when I read this, remember that it's describing the sort of feelings and emotions we should be having towards God. It's not just some sort of base physical thing. "Let him kiss me with kisses of his mouth. More delightful is your love than wine. Your name is spoken is a spreading perfume. That is why the maidens love you. Draw me, we will follow you eagerly. Bring me, O king, to your chambers. With you we rejoice and exult. We extol your love, it is beyond wine. How rightly you are loved." So that sort of feeling of falling in love with someone, that should be the feeling that one should be going after with God. We should be falling in love with him as we build this relationship with him. I wanted to point out that Jesus really perfectly fulfills the Old Testament commands, and that we can fulfill the highest principle of the Old Testament commands, that we that when we follow Jesus, he sets us an example of perfection in following commands that you couldn't get from having a list of commands. It's the picture can have so much more information in it than the words describing the picture could ever have. And so I put a little compilation of some verses that I'm going to give in a handout so that you guys can look that over, where it's basically the first one is where Jesus says something And then there's verses below that which talk about the sort of command that was in the Old Testament. Oftentimes, I don't know if you guys have English teachers that would say this, but show, don't tell. And that's what God did in Jesus when he himself came down to the earth. He decided to show us how to live, and rather than just telling us, because showing us can convey so much more information.